Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, a podcast celebrating chick lit and the so-called guilty pleasures you're sort of done feeling guilty about. My name is Caroline Donoghue, and when I released my first novel this year, I found myself being asked the same two questions over and over again. One, did I think of my novel as chick lit? And two, was I offended if it were called that? Which is weird because all the best women I know are also devoted fans of chick lit, and this podcast is dedicated to examining what's good, great, and occasionally questionable about the genre. Today I'm joined by author of A Hot Mess and What Fresh Hell, Lucy Vine. We're talking about Watermelon by Marion Keyes. Hi, Lucy.
Hello.
Welcome
how are
to
you?
The podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
First off, I want to ask why you picked Watermelon.
Because it's amazing. Mm-hmm. No, it was actually the first book I read that would kind of come into that category of chick lit.
Yeah.
When I was a teenager.
Mine too.
Yay.
Yeah.
And it's just such a brilliant, like, because chick lit obviously gets dismissed in a horrible, demeaning, patronising way a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like that when I was a teenager. I was off in my room reading sort of Dickens and Thomas Hardy and stuff and yeah. thought I was so clever. Mm-hmm.
So when I read this first when I was 13 and I thought it was amazing. And then continued reading like that, like my mum's books or my sister's books, books like this for years. And then when I was about 17, I made friends with lots of very literary boys.
Amazing.
And got the very strong sense that just because you read a lot doesn't mean you're reading correctly. And then I threw them all out, started reading Richard Yates and F. Scott Fitzgerald and Ernest Hemingway and all the important Irish writers. I know, I totally just like put my passion under a cloche for like 10 years. And now, now I'm just like having this total rebirth with the whole genre.
Oh, it's so lovely
it's
to discover.
It's so lovely.
Yeah, because that's it. I just assumed it was rubbish. And I think
Well, look, there was enough people telling you that it was, you know?
But I think it was just me. I just was such a snob about it. And I thought I was so clever reading all the wanky stuff. But I assumed it was badly written, like the sort of Sweet Valley stuff, which is really fun and entertaining, but really badly written. It's just repetitive and stuff. So I just assumed that was it. And I just remember my sister in the bedroom next door sort of howling away at these books and me being really snobby about it. And then eventually kind of giving in and reading Watermelon and just being blown away by how funny it was and how clever and brilliant the writing is.
So fantastic. So before we get properly into it, I'm going to quickly summarise the plot. So we start with Claire Walsh, who is a 28-year-old Irish woman living in London, whose world falls apart when her husband James leaves her on the day she gives birth to their first child. So she promptly moves back to her house in Dublin with her parents and her sisters, and she kind of works through her grief. She falls in love with a guy called Adam. She prepares for her new life, and then that all comes crashing down when James suddenly walks back into her life. And like, I remember reading that first page because it's so strong. It's very I remember, I think it's February 15th or something. I'll always remember February 15th because it was the day my daughter was born and the day my husband left me. And
it's
I remember
such a good sentence.
So fantastic. And this isn't the first chicklet I read, first chicklet you read.
Yeah.
The first book Marion Keyes wrote.
I know. Isn't that ridiculous?
And just to have that, like, that opening line. And I remember even at 13, reading that line and the first thought being, like, oh my God, I didn't know you were allowed to do that. I didn't know that men were, like, could just leave their wives. I mean, honestly, they can, but like,
no, they're trapped once they've given you a baby in your belly. You have to keep them.
And it was so strange because, like, I remember feeling this, like, fear and panic reading that, being like, a man can just leave you on the day you give birth to his child and then you just have to deal with it. And weirdly, when I was rereading this book, I started having horrible nightmares.
Oh, really?
Again.
About Gavin.
About my boyfriend. About being, because, like, she goes on and on throughout the early bits of the book being like, you know, oh, James, we were so happy. He was so lovely.
Yeah, everything seems so perfect.
He's so sweet. He's so adoring, all this stuff. And I'd just be like, oh, my boyfriend's going to stop loving me. And I had like nightmares about him turning into James.
It was sort of the worst nightmare, wasn't it? That you could be completely happy and, like, life was settled and then something like that just tears it apart. I mean, that certainly was my fear as a teenager. Now I don't care if nobody ever loves me again. But then I'm broken inside. But yeah, it's so weird how much you kind of go back into that space of like your teenage headspace, rereading something you read at that point. There's so many raging hormones going on and then having all these emotions about Marion Keyes.
So what was the emotions back that you felt reading as a teenager, and what were they like when you reread it now, and how have they changed?
Well, as a teenager, I think I probably felt quite a lot of shock like you did, like that this could possibly happen. I also very strongly remember that I thought she was really old.
I know!
At 29, that's so weird, isn't it? And that, God, of course she was having a baby and...
why hadn't she had one earlier? God.
Exactly, she's so old.
I think I remember thinking proper grown-up and now reading it and being the same age as Claire.
Yeah, I'm older.
God, you are old.
Way past my time to be left by my husband.
So, I mean, obviously the main drama of the book is the fact that Claire is left by James and then falls in love with Adam, but then James comes back. But to me, the actual meat of the book is the Walsh family and that their whole world and that kind of middle class suburban life that is so accurately portrayed.
It's amazing. I think it might have been my first sort of contact with Irish.
Really?
When I was reading it for the first time, and I was just fascinated because there's all this sort of language that they use and the turns of phrase and stuff, and I was absolutely enthralled. I just couldn't wait to meet a real life Irish
well,
very sheltered
do I have
teenager.
A treat for you.
but I totally agree with you. I'm so fascinated by the Walsh family. They're the best people ever. I love them so much. And what's funny as well, rereading it, is that this is ridiculous, but I'd completely forgotten that Adam existed.
He doesn't appear that much in the book.
Well, I think it's just because looking back, I think I just didn't sort of prioritise the love story in this book.
Mm-mm.
Which is weird, because obviously it is most of the book.
I
really hate Adam as well. I think that might have been it as well.
Okay,
I find
tell
him
me what
really
you hate
irritating.
Because I feel like Adam is very much a woke bae. He's very much a man on Twitter, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Tell me more about Adam and how you feel about
him. I don't know what it is. I just really hate him. I find him really like simpering. I think it's just because I'm dead inside and I hate love.
Just mistrust
men. He's just all that keeps going on about how special she is and what a good person she is. And I just completely loathe him. There were so many times reading it back that I just wanted to hit him. Oh, also, first date, he takes her to the gym. What the fuck, man?
So weird. So the trajectory of her and Adam is that her youngest sister, Helen, who is like this terrible beauty.
I love Helen. She's my
Helen's
favorite.
Fantastic. Her whole thing with Helen is that she's a horrible person, but everyone loves her.
Because she's pretty.
Because she's very pretty and kind of charming, and she's occasionally quite nice to you. And you're like, okay.
And then you become grateful because she said something nice.
And so she's 18, but she completely rules the household, and she's in uni. And every now and then, she just brings a boy home from uni when she needs an essay being written for her. And they're always these like long strings of piss of boys. And they're just like these gloomy guys that she brings out. And then one day she brings home Adam, who is 24, and he's like a mature student and he's gorgeous. And him and Claire, basically, it's weird love at first sight thing.
Yeah.
Like she's literally like peeling potatoes or something by the sink, very Irish.
Yeah.
Oh, no, she's making pesto, which is important.
Oh, that's right, yes, because her whole family can't cook and they're really suspicious of it.
Yeah, she tries to cook pesto and everyone's like, no, we don't do
this.
He's
the only one that eats it, so
yeah, and he sees her, and then he says, "Oh, can I see your baby?" And she's like, "Yeah." And she comes, they go and meet the baby together, and the baby has blue eyes. And he says to her, and he's known her for 6 minutes. He says to her, "If people were to see us on the street, they'd think I was her dad," which is a mad thing to say.
I just find him a creep. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I just don't trust it. I just don't trust his pure intentions. And I know, obviously, he comes good. He's the good guy in this book.
Yeah.
But I just don't trust him. I don't trust men. I think that's what it comes down to. I just need deep therapy.
Yeah, deep,
until
deep
I think
therapy.
Adam, as a teenager,
I think you'll struggle to
dreamy.
Enjoy this, coming back to this genre. If you don't trust men. Which maybe you shouldn't. Who knows? Then he calls her up a few days later and he's like, "Do you want to like do something? I'd love to be your friend." He uses the word friend a lot.
That's it as well. Oh, it just creeps me out. Stop pretending you're all pure and nice.
Yeah, yeah. And like he is sort of taking advantage of her loneliness in a little way. Like, she's just been abandoned by her husband of like 6 years or whatever. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to move in here.
The thing that also shocked me rereading it is how short the time frame is.
They know each other for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Also, her husband left. Like, she's got a newborn. Yeah. And it's and the whole thing is like 6 weeks tops.
I think it's the time frame of the book is 2 months long.
Okay. Yeah. But when like when she's kind of like, I will be alone forever. Oh, it's okay. I'm moving on. I'm falling in love with this new guy. It is like 4 weeks. And there's a little bit of me that's judging her for that.
Yeah, you kind. I kind of. Yeah, I kept expecting there to be a time in the book where they're like,
and 2 weeks have passed,
and the seasons passed, and then autumn became winter, and then winter became spring, and then I met someone.
Yes,
but actually, no, 2 weeks.
Yeah. So there is an element of that being of its time, isn't it? Because that is a bit depressing that she can't be alone for more than a few weeks.
But I actually think that is really indicative of was certainly my experience when I was writing my first book, where I didn't really know how to write transitional scenes.
Oh, it's so difficult, isn't it?
Because nobody tells you. It's so so obvious. Nobody tells you when you're writing your first book that you can just say 6 months later.
Yeah. And like,
or like, or whatever. You think that you have to like, you start at this one point with the character and then you minutely explain everything they do until the end of the book. But actually, you can just leave bits go.
Yeah. I found that with my first book as well because I was really aware that it does annoy me when there's too short a time frame.
Yeah.
Because I get so invested and then I'm like, oh, it's only been a few. Like, I don't know this character. It's only been a few weeks. So when I was writing Hot Mess, I was quite like, I need to stretch this out. And then realised it had only been 2 months as well. And I was like,
my book is also
changed
2 months.
Too much. Yeah, that's weird.
Oh my god, debut novels
right?
are 2 months long.
But it's annoying because I just don't think that you can have such a transformation in your character and your soul in 2 months.
No, you're absolutely
I could
right.
For 2 months and like nothing would change.
I know, I can
change
like
underwear in
take
2 months.
Up a hobby, give it up, and forget I ever joined that gym in 2 months.
Yeah.
But I'd love to know why that is because like my character in Promising Young Women, she like has this big transformative thing and she comes out to the side of this huge affair, a different person, and she's stronger. And this is like, it's been a summer. You know? How can you be different? You can't be.
I guess it must be about a week per 10,000 words-ish.
Yeah.
I guess it works
that makes
out
sense.
That way.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just the way it works out when you write.
I want to get back to the Walshes in general.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So we've got Jack Walsh, who's the dad.
Right. I didn't know his name. Well done for knowing that.
Jack
I just
Walsh.
Sort of said dad. I don't know. What's the mum's name?
Oh, I've forgotten. Oh. I think I'm going to say Mary.
Mary?
Just going by Irish women's names.
Mary? It's probably Mary.
Yeah. We've got the dad and the mum, and their dynamic is
amazing.
He does everything.
Yeah.
He does all the cleaning.
Yeah.
He does basically all the emotional labour of like telling the kids when they have to stop doing things. Like he has to go and have a word with Claire about maybe she should start washing.
That's such an adorable scene, isn't it?
I know. When she goes in, he goes into her room and is like, maybe, love, you could stop drinking during the day. That's not good, is it?
Yeah.
Maybe you could get out of the nightgown, maybe.
He's so cute, isn't he? I think this is where I wanted to, where I picked up kind of my obsession with families in books, because both of my books have had like a big, most of the kind of central theme is around families and stuff.
Really?
And I really do think that that kind of goes back to my love of American, because like I said before, I didn't really remember the love angle of this
book. Because all you remember is
just
that
the family
it's a family
stuff.
Of...
The hilarious five sisters.
Five sisters.
Yeah.
So Claire's the oldest.
And I love that she sort of vaguely pops up in later books. Have you read the others?
I've read the others.
Yeah.
And I love them.
Yeah.
And after Claire, we have Rachel and Margaret.
Yep, that's it, Maggie, yep.
Rachel and Maggie.
Yeah,
so, oh, sorry,
really
you know
book.
Her by her nickname. Your friends. Who don't actually appear in this book, but have Rachel Holiday and Angels.
Oh, it's Angels, isn't it? That
are the books that deal with those sisters, and they're fantastic.
Yeah.
Especially Rachel Holiday, I think, for me.
But
then the two sisters that we do see in this book are Helen, who is, we just talked about. She's 18.
She's amazing.
Fierce. She's, really beautiful. And then we have Anna, who is the second to youngest, who's this sort of like... hippie, kind of really into Wicca, really wants for ghosts to exist, always sort of like goes to the shop and then just never comes back because she's met someone with a van.
You know? She's amazing.
Yeah,
I
know.
Her.
I love her so much.
Yeah. And Helen like mocks her all the time and teases her and like does that trick with the intercom, doesn't she? Where she's like pretending to be
a ghost
calling through and giving her instructions.
And I just love the chaotic energy that's like, it feels like Claire's moping in her room, but there's still this like fluidness going through the house, this chaos all the time. These sisters were always getting into like mischief and stuff.
Yeah.
And
Do you have siblings, Karen?
I do. I'm the youngest of four.
Oh, because I'm the youngest of five.
Really?
So that was sort of similar. I mean, I've got brothers as well as sisters, but it felt very similar. I remember as a teenager, that sort of overwhelming loudness that she sort of writes so well of being in a big family.
She really does.
And also that thing of sort of unconditional love where you are horrible to each other. Like Helen is horrible to everybody, but that's fine because that's just like family. Like we forgive each other and we still love each other anyway, but we wouldn't be able to behave that way with your friends or never come back.
And it feels like, I feel like you can always tell when somebody writes a big family novel whether or not they come from a big family.
Yeah. Because I don't know enough about Marion. Does she have a big family?
She does. She's the oldest of five.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so.
So she's Claire, isn't she?
She is a Claire, yeah.
I mean, everybody assumes that first novel is about you, don't they?
They do.
They do that to you.
They do that to me. Yeah. They do. Well, yeah, what's interesting is that, like, so I wrote a novel, Promising Young Women, if anyone's bought it, please do, I need to eat. but yeah, it was, because I worked in advertising for a long time and it's set in the world of advertising.
Yeah, of course.
And so because of that, everybody assumed that everything else was the same, that I had like had an affair with someone, that, you know, I was from a single parent family, which is not true either. Yeah. And like all these things they just assume were true.
Yeah, there was a horrible thing because it's exactly the same with Hot Mess, and because I am single and...
Yeah.
Ellie Knight, the character in my book, is single. But there was a horrible sort of element to it where a lot of people thought my mum was dead because the character's mum is dead, and like a lot of people kind of tried to talk to me in this really sensitive way, and I actually felt real like a fraud because she's not. And it was such a weird, awful, sensitive thing because a lot of people kind of contacted me and were like, my mum died, and you described it so well, like you lost your mum, right? And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry, but I haven't, and I'm so glad that you feel like it helped or whatever. But that was, but people really just do assume.
I think, and, you know, men come up with things women draw on their personal lives, and that is the cliche that you always get.
Have you written your next one yet, Caroline?
Yes.
Because they don't ask it so much when you've written the second one.
Oh, I'm
or
so
is it
glad.
A sequel?
No, it's not a sequel.
Okay, you're fine then.
The second one is about like lesbians in the west of Ireland. So
amazing.
I'm hoping I don't get like outrightly asked about my sexuality on panels.
Might do.
Well, am I? And maybe
it's
that'll
a lot
be fun too.
To write features around it to promote it when it sort of deviates from your own life, though.
Oh God, why didn't I think of that?
I have trouble.
But I do think that like that whole thing of like women. An autobiography and how people assume that it is the same is like one of the many reasons I think that chick lit is not taken seriously.
Yeah, of course, because we can't come up with anything out of our own brains.
Yeah, no. Mm. Like Marion, she is the oldest of five kids and maybe she
but
was
drawing...
you've
got to get it from somewhere.
she doesn't have kids. I mean, she's in a long marriage, but... Yeah. She wasn't left at 28 or whatever. None of that is true. But yeah, she started from a place of like, okay, I'm a 20-something-year-old Irish woman living in London... And then she like made some stuff from there. And that's fiction. Like you take bits you know and you like clamp on bits you don't know. And then it becomes a different character and all that. And I find it really infuriating when people don't acknowledge that.
Yeah. I'm going to write a zombie apocalypse novel just so that they can't say that.
Yeah. Well, actually, do you know the writer Michelle T at all?
No.
Michelle T is famous for writing memoirs. She's written like five memoirs. In fairness, she's had an exciting enough life. She's she was a sex worker and then she was this and then she was that. And she like has experienced a lot. Mm. But she kind of punked everyone by writing this memoir called Black Wave. And everyone was like, oh, it's like her sixth memoir. But then halfway through, the apocalypse happens.
Oh my God, that is amazing.
It's such, she basically punked everybody. Like
that
it was
is amazing.
So good. Yeah, it's called Black Wave.
And I bet
Wave.
There were a bunch of reviewers who didn't actually read it.
I know.
Just kind of went like, yeah, it's her sixth memoir. It's really boring.
But back to the big family novel. Mm. I honestly think that the sisters in this book are much better. Not better, but they feel more real to me than any other famous big family novel.
Yeah.
Like much more than, I mean, Little Women was a long time ago, obviously.
Yeah, they're too nice to each other.
Yeah. but the way that the problems that these women have, like, you know, Anna, like, is kind of a space cadet who sort of sells weed and is sort of lost and she can't really keep a job down.
Yeah.
And Maggie is sort of the reliable sister, but also she's got a lot of stuff that she's not explored. And she actually experiments with bisexuality as well.
Yeah.
We get Rachel, who's a drug addict and who goes to rehab.
Yeah, that's an amazing book, isn't it? Rachel's Holiday.
Rachel's Holiday is an incredible book.
Yeah. I'm sure in Rachel's Holiday, like when we kind of return to Claire, she's still got Adam like hanging around like a puppy.
She does.
And it's in a really like dismissive way. It's described in a really dismissive way where she's like, oh, my older sister Claire, who still has her toy boy, and like he follows her around like pathetic little puppy dog. And that was the only time where I was like, yay, I'm glad that Adam and Claire are still together.
And there's this fantastic scene at the end of Rachel's holiday where they're all home for Christmas and they make Adam do everything. They make him make the tea, change the channel, answer the door. It's like, yes, this is Adam's rightful place in his home.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This is one of my favorite parts as well. There's this bit near the start where she says, I really wanted a drink, but my parents don't keep alcohol in the house. Oh, and then she says, I say that as if it were a choice or a moral stance, but actually they can't keep it because we kept drinking it.
Did you still lick
it? Yes, it was the realest thing ever. Like, so they had, she's like, oh, my parents used to have quite a well-stocked, respectable liquor cabinet because my dad would win whiskey at golf. And I'm like, that is the most middle-class suburb thing ever. That is my life. It's like, dad's winning whiskey at golf is the most... Like, it's so perfect. And then obviously they kept the girls kept stealing liquor out of the bottles and then watering it down.
So
and
good.
It's just so perfect. Like, they literally, and then they have this kind of cold war where the mum like hides the alcohol and then they find it and then she's hide it again. But nobody ever mentions it.
I think I got the idea to steal alcohol and water it down from this book.
So did I. Oh, I love it so, so much. And just like the amount of people just sitting on beds having a laugh eating chocolate.
Oh yeah,
there's so much of that. And I really love it.
Yeah, me too.
But then there's like James comes back.
Oh yeah,
which is the sort of the main big drama, I think, that happens really.
But it's quite late in the day, isn't it? Because we hear about James throughout the whole book and he's kind of only described in this sort of one-dimensional, he was just an amazing husband way. And it's just a sort of confusing, why did he go? And I think it was also the first time I'd ever read a book where I sort of realised that you can't trust the narrator or your hero.
That's,
and not
so
because
true.
She's lying, but just because we all sort of represent ourselves in a certain way that isn't necessarily true, or like we remember things wrong. And especially because when James comes back, he tries to convince her that it, like, the reason he had an affair was because she is such hard work and she was so demanding and so difficult, and she sort of starts
and selfish
to believe it. Yeah,
and
that's
all this.
It. Yeah, and then you kind of realise that actually, well, you find out that he was the sort of desperately insecure one, and he just can't admit that he loves her desperately.
Completely.
And has always felt insecure about her because she's so amazing. So there was just, it was just sort of, I remember as a teenager being very kind of surprised by the fact that actually she was like this goddess.
Yeah.
I know that that sounds weird, but also, like, obviously we all get brainwashed as women about, like, how we should be grateful to have a man and, like, we should grab onto one and hold on to him and, like, trick him into being with us forever. And I think as a teenager, like, especially then, I really had that impulse and I was quite, like, convinced that she had ruined everything, that she had fucked up this marriage.
You believe James?
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that weird? And reading it back, I kind of had this sort of flood of horrifying revelations about myself as a teenager where I did just kind of buy into this idea that, like, she'd lost him and it was his fault.
Her fault,
sorry. And, like, she had to do whatever to get him back.
Yeah, and what yeah. was he supposed to do except go run to another woman? And you're like, oh, wow, of course, James.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like, be grateful that he's come back, Claire. It's totally. So sad,
but
isn't it?
Now that you've, like, lived your life as an adult woman, I have seen so many relationships like that. And, like, the thing is, if this relationship were happening today, we'd call that emotional abuse.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Because absolutely.
That's exactly what he does. He completely gaslights
her. Trying to make her think she's crazy, yeah.
I know so many women who are like, oh, you know, my boyfriend's so amazing, incredible, da 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 da. And then you see them, like, becoming fractions of their former selves when they're actually around their boyfriends.
Yeah.
They become so quiet, mm-hmm. they become so closed off, and they're just like, yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's so weird, isn't it?
And you're like, either you're lying about who you are around me, or you're afraid of being who you are around him, because he's so insecure and so sort of weird about you being a big chatty laugh the way I know you, that you're just like squandering it around him because you're afraid that I've seen that relationship happen, and it's like, which is weird. I think when I read this, it felt like, oh, like a just like a plot device or a plot twist or whatever, and you know, he was a bit of a psycho and a bit weird and da da. But like, now that I've like lived, I'm like, oh, the Jameses.
No, they are out there.
They are out there.
Yeah.
And he almost gets away with it. If it weren't for those pesky kids.
I know, right?
So what happens then is he flies back into Dublin, and she's like made her peace with the fact that they're going to get divorced. And she's like, okay, well, you know, how are we going to do this? How are we going to do like child support and maintenance payments? And he's like, oh, you're not divorcing me. And she's like, what?
I'm going to forgive you.
And he's like, I'm going to forgive you. And she's, like, she's like, forgive me for what? And he's like, well, you were hard. Yeah, exactly. All the things that you just said. And she basically just kind of in a trance sort of accepts that she was a horrible person.
But we would, wouldn't we? Don't you think? I mean, even now in this sort of very, I'm a very angry, strong feminist. And yet I think if somebody actually, who I loved or I thought I'd loved, told me that I was a shitty human being, I'd probably believe them.
Yeah. And then he's sort of like,
the most.
Once he like gets her back, once he like snares her, it's so fucking dark. Once he snares her back into the web, then he starts like giving her these little concessions. He's like, oh, you didn't mean to be an ungrateful child. It's just your family.
He's
who made
so
you that
shit.
Way. And she's like, okay. It is abuse, man.
Oh, it's dark, isn't it?
Yeah. And like there's it's a brilliant bit that, like, as an Irish person, I really felt as well. Like, you know, so they have their initial meeting at her house, and everyone's really frosty to him or whatever. And then he says, oh, can I meet you again? And she said, yeah, come over tonight. And he said, I don't want to come over. He makes this reference he makes all these references about, oh, they'll pour boiling oil on me or whatever, and everyone's hostile towards me. And he kind of drops all these sort of subtle kind of hints.
The poor me thing, yeah, like that, he's the victim.
That he's the victim, and that, like, Claire, because she comes from this big mad Irish family, that she's, like, kind of this, like, colonial rascal, and just like, it's a kind of a weird xenophobia thing going.
Oh,
you know?
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't see that. That's interesting.
There's a very much like a James is like a posh English boy who has found himself in this Irish family that are really loud, and everyone talks over each other, and everyone sort of takes a piss out of him, and he doesn't like it, and he's so proud, and he's just like, I need to extract her from this.
Yeah, take her far away from them. And then he keeps calling and being like, come now, when are you coming?
Yeah.
Oh, he's it's a so scumbag. Creepy.
And then she finds out, because what happens is, this is obviously spoilers all around, like, you know, it's a 20-year-old book.
It's 95. Come on, guys, get your act together.
She called up his office and to arrange something, and he's out, and his sort of colleague and one of her good friends,
that's George. His name. I really like George.
I like George too. He's a bit pissed because it's Friday and it's the 90s. He's like, it's 2 o'clock, it's Friday, everyone's pissed.
Oh, and he does all that therapy speak, doesn't he?
I know, he does. He's very sweet. And he says to her, he's like, oh, like, I hope he came back on his hands and knees. I hope he, like, gave you a big piece of jewellery and a holiday in the Maldives to boot. And she's like, well, no, actually, he made me see that I was a horrible person. And he was like, what? And then she kind of compares her notes with all of their mutual friends. And
she
they're
then
all
rings
like,
Judy, doesn't she? Who I hate even more than
Judy's
I hate
the
Adam.
Worst.
Oh, can we just talk about Judy? Because I hate her. And I remember hating her as a teenager. And I hate her even more rereading it now.
It's so
she's
weird.
She's the worst friend. I've like.
So we meet Judy on like page 2.
Yeah.
Where
she's awful then.
She's awful then. She's supposed to be like one of her best friends from college.
Yeah.
She's also from Dublin.
Mm.
And like, she's immediately, she picks her up at the hospital, and like, Claire's in tears
because
her husband's left
her, and she's like rolling her eyes at Claire and being like, oh, come on, like, get it together sort of thing. It's awful.
It's so, I'm very much like, oh, yeah, we all kind of knew.
Yeah.
Like.
Such a dickhead.
And she sort of rings her throughout the book and she's always a cold asshole.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is
so,
like.
Oh, come on, get over it already type of attitude.
Which I think it has to be intentional because it's not as if, it's not as if it's like we can say, oh, well, you know, Marion Keyes was a debut novelist and she wasn't able to write that character well because she's written so many other side characters so well.
Sisters are so rounded. And
yeah, and even her other friend, Laura, is really rounded
as
well.
She's fun,
the one who shags
a
19-year-old.
Yeah, I like her.
I like her too. Wasn't a lot of her, but what I enjoyed of her.
I kind of feel like if you're best friend has just been dumped by their husband, never mind all the extra circumstances like the baby and the affair and all this stuff, like you are so nice to that person and you say, yeah, he's a shithead, I'm on your side, I'm here however much you want, but she, like, Claire ends up feeling guilty about putting her in the middle, like at that big that early stage,
and she feels like embarrassed,
she's like, oh, I can't
crying
keep going on about it, oh yeah, and like Judy's really annoyed because I keep crying kind of attitude. And then it's even worse when she rings her at the end of the book to confirm that what George said, to say, and then Judy's like, oh yeah, yeah, like my boyfriend went out with James like a month ago and he said all that, and I was like, why didn't you call this person who was heartbroken, whose husband had left, didn't know why, she doesn't understand why he's gone off and had an affair. So you know that he has not only left this other woman and dumped her, but you also know that he desperately wants you back. Why haven't you rung your best friend? My best friend saw an ex-boyfriend from like 8 years ago in the street and like didn't tell me for 2 weeks. I didn't speak to her for like ages. I was so angry. You ring and you tell them if you have gossip about their ex.
We never get an explanation as to why Judy's a cunt.
Such a dickhead. I'm so glad you said cunt. She is a cunt.
Judy's a cunt.
She is the worst friend I've ever seen in literature. I'm just going to put that on her.
I honestly thought, because I kind of forgot how it ended, the book. Yeah. I thought that Judy being a cunt was an underlying thing for Claire staying in Dublin and being like, my London friends are full of shit.
Oh, she doesn't stay
but
in
she,
Dublin.
She goes to, back to
I
London.
I think she should have stayed. Like, her amazing family there. Laura's there.
Yeah.
Like, Adam was going to be there, I guess. But then he moves just to be with her because he's such a fucking loser.
He is. But he's a very hot loser.
Well, apparently, I just can't picture him as hot because he just annoys me so much.
What I also love, though, I love how, like, you know, back to the sort of throughout the book, she's like, oh, and James was so sexy and I was always sort of sitting on his lap and telling him how amazing he was. And then she sees him again and she's like, was he always short?
I love that. I know, it's such a good. Yeah. But this is what I mean again. Like, you can't trust your narrator too much because, like, we all remember things wrong and we all.
Right?
It's so clever.
Do you know who Claire reminds me of, though? Have you read Rebecca?
Yeah.
So do you know how the narrator of Rebecca is always kind of going on about how unbelievably plain she is, how she's sort of like not good enough for Maxim, how this and this and this.
But then the terrible inner voice of every woman.
Right? But then like there's all these little hints throughout the book that are like basically signifying that she's a beautiful girl and incredibly evocative and stuff. Like there's even this bit where Maxim says to her, because obviously famously we never find out her name, and she says, oh, it's sort of a beautiful, unusual, exotic name, just like you.
Yeah.
And it's like, we don't get the full picture of who this woman actually is, you know?
Oh, that's so interesting, yeah.
And Claire is the same. Claire is just like, oh, I'm just a big fat mess or whatever. And everyone around Claire is like, you are the most
stunning.
Fun, the most beautiful.
Yeah, and you get hints of it, don't you, when she describes the parties. When she's talking about how wonderful James is, she kind of says like, oh, and he was always so lovely, like helping tidy up and do the washing up and stuff after I'd set fire to the ceiling at 3 in the morning. It was always like, she sounds like the best fun. But
completely,
and the fact that she thought James was so wonderful, even though he was clearly such a boring fucker, like made him seem much sexier. And then you meet him, and you're like, oh, he's awful, and he's so shitty. Everything he says is so shitty, isn't it?
Yeah, and you really get the sense that like everyone for their entire relationship has been like, what's she doing with him?
Judy finally comes through at that point, doesn't she? Calling him a boring fucker, she does finally say it at the end.
He's a boring fucker. And, like, I think I've seen, I mean, maybe I've even seen you retweet this, or maybe you tweeted it, something like, I know so many incredible, amazing women who have, like, book deals and TV deals or whatever, and they're going out with a man who owns a mattress and a PS4. Was that you?
I don't think that was me. That sounds way too good for me.
Someone like you, anyway.
That is so true.
I mean, everyone knows, like, world's best woman going out with world's most okayest man.
Definitely. But also single women as well. I know so many amazingly cool, clever, beautiful single women. And
yes, Bridget, why are there so many single women in their 30s?
But like, I couldn't say the same about any men. Like, I don't know many single
every
men.
So often,
the only one I know is my brother,
will...
I know why he's single, because he's a fucking loser. Just joking, Phil.
Just joking.
Just joking.
But like, every now and then, like every once in a blue moon, a single friend will say to me, like, oh, you know, I'd love to be set up. I'm so sick of Tinder or whatever. Do you know anyone? I'm like, no.
Nope. They were all grabbed at 20.
Yeah. Right? But like, there's this real sense, though, that like men find amazing women and women invent amazing men.
Right? That is so well put. That is excellent.
It's like every like... brilliant relationship that you see in your life is always like I had a friend to me say to me once, she was like, you know, oh, I just want to meet, like, is it so much for me to ask to meet a guy who's heard of Georgette Hare? Right. And I said, yes.
Sorry.
You need to find an average potato man and give him
tell
a copy
him
of
that.
Venetia. And you have to invent them.
I know. Well, this is partly what we were talking about before, this kind of thing of, like, women just lie to themselves a lot. Yeah. Like, Claire's lying to herself all the way through this book, and we don't find that out until the end. Yes. And we lie to ourselves. We tell ourselves we're happy. Well, like, we put ourselves down all the time, but we also just lie to ourselves that we're happy when we're in shitty situations. And it's often only when we've come out of the other side of a shitty situation that we can go, oh, right, oh, that was really shitty.
And the worst thing is there's always 10 people who are like, oh, yeah, he was wrong for you.
Yeah.
I'm like, well,
that
note would have been nice. So I was thinking, actually, Kate, who is Claire's baby, Claire
right.
and James' baby,
yeah.
is turning 23
Shut up.
In February.
Shut up.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Right? She's of a perfect age to be in a Walsh book.
Oh my God, yes.
They're always in their 20s.
Marion, come on.
I've tweeted her. I've done my due diligence. So, okay, let's.
Start
what would a Kate book be?
Oh, that's so difficult. Oh no, because she's covered so much stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, Kate needs to kind of explore the post Me Too world.
Oh my, yeah.
And like, not. Have a romance,
right?
Just
I
kind
feel
of...
like because you know we for the stands like us, we would right. need sort of like shades of the first watermelon.
That's true. So loads of in jokes.
Do you know what I feel like it could be?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. So Adam and Claire are like, you know, in Dublin. They're
so
in Dublin.
Old.
They're beautiful and happy and okay. great. And
but they'd probably be like 60.
And they're 60. So they live in no, they're not. They're
oh, come on,
they're
okay.
in their 50s, 40s. I don't know. So. They're in Dublin doing their thing, and Kate is in university in England, and she gets pregnant, and she has to move in with James, who is her estranged father.
So good.
Right?
Yes.
And he's like, has to go through the whole thing of like, he abandoned her when he was young, and he was never involved. I'm assuming, based yep. on his interest in her in this book,
yep.
that he had no like
and
time has, in her adolescence or youth.
And has the father of the baby abandoned her, like what happened to her
yes.
mother? Gotcha, right.
We're
yes.
doing a Gilmore Girls on this.
And is Helen going to be hired as like the babysitter or like
yes.
au pair type of
yeah,
person?
Yeah,
she's
okay.
awful.
So Helen moves in with them. So she moves yeah. in with them, James, and James is like a boring fucker, and they have yeah. to make him into a good person, and he's like in his 50s and he's never married and he's a boring asshole
yeah.
and then like Helen comes as like the Mary Poppins
yeah.
and at this point like she's like what 30 31 I don't know, and she just like whips everybody into shape and like makes like James good, I guess
yeah.
and raises the baby and proves herself as being more than just a beautiful asshole. I think it'd be really good.
I love this. I think that we should write it if Marion doesn't want to.
I don't think she has things to do.
Does she have sort of intellectual property rights? I don't know how this works. We could just rewrite her books, right? Everybody writes
That's
James
fine.
Bond these days.
Right? And like Sarah Manning just rewrote Vanity Fair.
Exactly.
And Watermelon is like Vanity Fair.
It's exactly
in that
the same.
It's a classic. Final question.
In that we have an unreliable narrator.
In that we have an...
Boom.
Boom.
Drop mic.
Drop mic. Final most important question.
Yep.
Who would you cast... in like a new they made it as a TV movie, I think, with Anna Friel.
Did they? Oh my god, I didn't even know that.
I think it was very loosely based.
Okay.
So I remember watching it when I was younger and being really excited because a book I had read was a film.
Yeah.
And then like having that first disappointment of like, this isn't the same.
For Watermelon. Okay, so she's like 29, isn't she? Mm-hmm. Oh, she's American, but I think Rachel Bloom would be so, from My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, she would be so funny and good as that. She looks how I imagine Claire looks. Like, she's got the blue-eyed, like, Irish dark hair thing going on. And she's just so funny. Like, Sharon Horgan was the other person I was thinking, but she's too old, isn't she?
Yeah, she's a bit.
So maybe she could play her, like, in the sort of later books when Claire is, like, in her 40s.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I just think she'd be amazing. She'd have to do the English accent, or the Irish accent, in fact. Is that quite easy to master?
I think if anyone can do it, Rachel Bloom can do it. I wouldn't mind if this, I'm not even that attached to it being an Irish thing, because Rachel Bloom is like, she draws on her Jewish heritage a lot.
Yeah.
So if it was like a New York book where the family was a big Jewish family,
that would be perfect, wouldn't it?
It would be different cultural nuances, but the energy would be the same of like just sniping at each other and like falling in out of one room and like. It would be really good.
That would be amazing.
Oh, God. Someone call us. We're coming up with great ideas here. And like Anna, I think Kristen Stewart could do a good Anna.
Oh, she'd be
great. But maybe she's too serious.
But Anna's quite serious.
Yeah.
Actually, Anna's book is my favourite of them.
I haven't read Anna's book. What's Anna's book about?
So heartbreaking. I remember just like falling apart with that book. It was so wonderful. They're all just brilliant. I just want her to keep writing Walsh books. And I'm so excited that she's definitely now doing this Kate Walsh book.
I did tweet her, and she said, you're gas. So that means.
Did she reply?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, Mary gave me a quote for my book, so we're
you're
tight.
You're besties. Shit, is she going to listen to this?
Yeah, I think so. I'm really embarrassed now.
Oh, hi,
Mary. Hey,
Mary. I love you.
She's like the most adored, like, famous chiclet person alive, probably.
Well, quite rightly.
And, like, she's just so sound to everyone.
I know.
Like,
just a decent human, isn't
fucking
she?
Fucking great.
We're just doing this bit because she's going to listen, aren't we?
Yes.
Tweet me, babe.
Tweet babes. So, final question. I've probably said final question about 10 times. Would you recommend this book to people? And, you know, what would be your, like, strapline recommendation for this?
I definitely would recommend it, and I have recommended it many, many times. Mm-hmm. I think I'd just say it's so funny and clever and just says so much about family. Like, I'd read it for the family story.
Even if there was no men in it, you'd still read it.
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, they kind of get in the way, the men part.
Yeah, everyone but the dad, who's kind of an honorary woman anyway, reads Mary Claire.
He's the best, isn't he? Yeah. I love the dad character. Yeah, read it for the dad character. Also, read my book for the dad character.
Ooh. Okay, so before we go,
yeah,
please tell me about your new book and where people can find you on social.
Oh, my new book is called Are We Nearly There Yet? And it is out in
It's a very Marion Keyes title.
Right?
Yeah.
No, I haven't ripped her off, I swear. So that's out in May in paperback. And you can find me on Twitter mostly at... It's four letters. It's LECV.
Yeah, it's very like your Twitter handle of like a large company. Welcome to LECV Credit.
It's Lucy Elizabeth Constance Vine.
Elizabeth Constance Vine.
I know, it's such a wanky name. Thanks, Mom. So it's meant to be a kind of funny eat, pray, love. She's called Alice. Mm-hmm. She's turning 30, like every single fucking book I've written. And she sort of hates her life. She can't stop having sex with her stupid ex-boyfriend.
Great.
So she decides to kind of go off travelling around the world.
And is it shit?
The book?
No one's written the travel book yet where someone has not that great a time.
Oh, yeah, no, she totally, like, doesn't have a good... She still sort of learns stuff, but there is a sort of ultimate, like, travelling doesn't solve anything. You're still the same dickhead you were when you left sort of vibe.
So our mutual friend and dumb woman, Alex Haddo, she inherited a bunch of money and went travelling, and she is the only person who's ever done that who came back and she was like, it was not that great. And I love her so much more for that. She's already like my divine soul partner, but like, I love her so much more for admitting it, you know?
That's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not for everyone, is it?
Thank you so much, Lucy Vine, for coming in. And thank you, Marion Keyes, for making the best book ever. After my conversation with Lucy, I managed to get Marion Keyes on the phone to discuss her memories of writing her debut, Watermelon, and how it felt to have written a novel that became such a significant part of so many young women's lives, mine and Lucy's included.
I mean, writing that book was the most fun I have had doing anything ever in my entire life. And none of the books, you know, I've never enjoyed any of them as much as I enjoyed writing that one.
And why was that, do you think?
Because I hadn't a clue what I was doing. And I really mean that. Like, I just thought, you could write anything when you wrote a book. Anything that came into my head, I just threw it in. And I had no idea of, like, maybe that's not appropriate, or maybe that doesn't belong here or whatever. Like, I had no idea of rules. And it was just, it was a very joyous time. You know, I had no idea really how lucky I was with all of it. Like, I wrote that book for myself and I just enjoyed every second, and I didn't agonize about plots. I didn't agonize about characterization. Like, I mean, you know, I probably think the subsequent books I've written have been better crafted and everything, but Watermelon was just me doing it for me. And it was just such a pleasure.
Thanks to Marion Keyes for talking, and thank you for listening. If you want to hear my full conversation with Marion, where we talk about the post-feminist landscape of the 1990s, emotional abuse, and inventing the famous Walshisters, listen out for the bonus episode, which is coming very soon. We'll be back next week with a new episode of Sentimental Garbage, where I chat to Aisha Malik about Bridget Jones' Diary by Helen Fielding. This has been Sentimental Garbage, and I've been Caroline O'Donoghue. You can follow me on Twitter at Zaroline, that's Czaroline, or email me about the podcast at ZaroLineO'Donoghue@gmail.com. Thanks to Harry Harris for the jingle, Gavin Day for the logo, and Acast for the recording space. This has been a Justice for Dumb Women podcast produced by Hannah Varrell.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.